I know nothing of his viscera. I do not know if golems can love, or if they can make love. With another golem? With anything? All that clay might gum up the works. It's said that, like Adam, we're all born as golems, guileless mammal forms, that misfortune shapes us into the complex humans that we are. But I've met some breadboxes more capable of love than many of the misfortune-molded walking Freud couches I've encountered. My dreidel, I joke. I made you out of clay. But how do you make a golem? I didn't know, so I Googled it. It said that you harvest a bathtub's worth of clay exhumed from a grave by a riverbed and fill a body bag. You take it home and form a colossal three-dimensional gingerbread man with your mortal hands. You knead the shapeless husk to near human shape. You are tender and stern. You do this at night while weeping, praying, while drunk. Then you write the name for God on the skin of a woman who has died in childbirth, skin the span of a baby's chest. Or you ask for and are given a hymen on which you write Elohim. You write Hashem, a name of God, and a magic formula on a piece of parchment, a slip of paper, it could be a post-it note, and place it in the golem's mouth. You write Emet, the Hebrew word for truth, on its forehead. When you wish to undo the life of the creature who was only a certain kind of alive, you erase the first letter, Aleph, leaving Met, the Hebrew for death. You do not know Hebrew, you write, if you do not know Hebrew, you write something else. You free write, you edit, you take the name of God from its mouth. Again, the creature becomes the bed of a river, is the earth only, can be used to make pots or coffee mugs or terracotta tiles. How had I made the golem? Clay, amphetamines, the Hebrew I remembered from my bar mitzvah, a kit ordered from the internet. It was a mess the first time. The second time also, I threw the clay over the fence. He'd come to me in the night. I woke, and before I opened my eyes and saw him, I knew he was there, standing silently by our bed, a massive presence, a dark shadow in the dark, wearing a dark suit and a bowler. A nice touch, I'd thought. Mary was in the bed beside me. We'd been married for 6 years, though we'd been together for 13, having met at university when we both lived in the annex on Brunswick, just off Bloor. We tried to have children, but eventually our doctor had determined that, in terms of procreation, I was a Peter Pan, a feeble warbler in a choir of perpetual boys. The few swimmers I had were dog-paddling splutterers, only good for show. Will I ever be able to have a child of my own, I asked. Unlikely, the doctor said. We tried anyway. Each month, a ritual of waiting, of hoping, praying, of temperature-appointed times, of reassurances, of discussions, of options. There was a month when we had thought Mary was pregnant. Hoping against hope, Mary was late, and she had a feeling, a kind of murmuration behind her ribs, blood cells turning in a slow saraband. Or maybe it was too much smoked meat, too much coffee, an anxiety-hope blend. We'd been trying for so long. We'd made tomato sauce and soups together, had made bread and family meals, as if through this ritual we could transubstantiate our relationship into a living thing, a viable zygote that would divide and divide and divide into our child Zeno, into our child Zeno's paradox. The arrow finds its mark, the rabbit overtakes. We would make more cells in the world, and the world would come into a greater focus, a kind of higher resolution pixelation. Our story would become more vibrant, luminous, moving, happy. But as we worried and hoped, I was increasingly turning into a kind of clay myself, my cells joining, not dividing, becoming large, simple shapes, cellular goons. At one point, I gave sperm to the doctor to be concentrated, centrifuged, boiled down like maple syrup, syringed, syringe. I remember when I was a child in an Irish hospital ward, rows of starched white sheets, metal-framed beds, a large needle stuck into my upper thigh. The needle still in, the starched blue nurse replaced the syringe with another and again emptied it into my muscle. I'd been given a first day of issue cover commemorating John Millington's singe. I thought it said John Millington's syringe, his shaggy dog mustache and expressionless face. Are you happy? My wife would ask. It was then that the golem appeared beside my bed, silent, shadowy, dapper. My golem, I made you out of clay. Was the golem happy? It was then that I ill-advisedly quit my teaching job without telling my wife, even though we had no real savings. I imagined myself a sad sack in a Tom Waits song, heading west with a suitcase and a backseat full of bourbon, looking for cheap hotels in which to write a mixture of despair and out-of-focus faith. But really, after I quit my job, I just stayed home, became silent, and slept during the day. My marriage ended. My grandfather used to say, "Der Eulen is a Goylem. People are fools." And I was people. For years, I thought I saw my golem walking down the street in the booth at a restaurant, in the passing lane beside me on the highway. I kept watching for him, waiting. And then I got an email. It was from the golem, all caps. Typical. I didn't take it for internet shouting, but as an ironic dig at the simple preschool sensibility of the average golem, my wife, my ex-wife, had had a child. Unto her, a son was born. Apparently, the child was his. I imagined their late-night coupling as if it were a folktale, and they, in the rain and fog, in a graveyard, had come together, an elemental and preternatural force, hundreds of years ago, as if it had to be so, the cracking open of gravestones and of things as they were. I saw her thin hands reaching around the incredible clay hulk of the golem's shoulder, gripping, leaving scalloped impressions, like a child squeezing fingers in a kindergarten craft project. The golem, like the swaying of an old tree. His face wasn't peaceful. Rather, I'd say, unperturbed. From a different time, a character in a legend following the story he knows to be written for him with quiet resolution and little emotion. But it wasn't like that. I made the child, his email said. Again, an opaque night, a story. Under the crow limbs of a dark tree, he did agitate his fertile horn until his seed was free. Lightning striking the oak in a Jekyll and Hyde moment, the instant of the golem's grounding, glass vials like vacuum tubes hidden under the black wing of his cloak. And then he rides to town, a headless horseman with his satchel full of jism. I assumed that Mary hadn't planned on being the mother of the golem's child. I thought of that creepy yet surprisingly beloved kid story where the mother slinks across town, sneaks into her grown son's bedroom to hold him and sing of her love, and imagined the golem silently crushing the screen door handle in his fist and letting himself in the back door to Mary's kitchen. Mary stretched out on the living room couch, her nightgown hiked high in the summer heat, bottle of her customary sleeping pills beside her. Stalwart, silent, unblinking, the golem solemnly approaches. The golem had a syringe, a turkey baster. But then my story fades. It was not the story he wrote in his email. Yes, he arrives and stands before her in the summer heat, but then he touches his big fingers to her slim face, the golem large as an armoire. She smiles. He leans down, a hummock come to life. He kisses her forehead. She feels the cool coils of his lips, the low rush of his breath. His eyes are endless, filled with desire to be human, to be tender, to love. He would lie with Mary, would be a lithe Romeo to her delicate Juliet. But almost human that he was, he could not. Yet Mary would lie beside him after, butterfly fluttering through the great forest of his body. They would join, would share life, would create it as the golem was created from the unpromising mud of earth. Life would be created by sharing life, their life. His forehead pressed against hers, imprinting it with the word Emmet, truth, met, death, always there within the word, but also marked on Mary's skin, its mirror image. The golem and Mary from his sample did join gametes, both male and female, and so did cause of the spring. And I, distant, absent, my words telling another story. The child, the golem said, was named after me. Kidding, he said, it wasn't. They named it Renee after Mary's father. When I'd finished reading his email, I'd responded immediately. Golem, I said, congratulations to all of you. And since you seem to have some experience in this sort of thing, grant me, if you would, this kindness. All the golems, from those in the Bible to those in Reb Lowe's Prague, were claymation palookas, with no more wit than a brick. But they had life. Sometimes a golem is created out of longing, ambition, failure, and a need to know that you are somehow real, that your ministrations and hope may affect the world. But sometimes, too, in time, a son can create his own father. A golem, too, can create the writing that created him, a kind of pearl writing a clam into being. As I wrote him into life, or at least wished it, so he would write me. And so in the Toronto fog, we met at the hour and location he suggested, midnight at the bench outside the closed music store. My golem was carrying a small box, a dented green metal cooler held to his chest in an embrace, protecting it as in a mother and child painting. I was both disturbed and relieved by what was likely inside. "I have it," he said. "Don't spend this all in one place," I said, and handed him an envelope. "Really," I said, "don't." And then he continued down the sidewalk, past the 7-Eleven, the library, the mattress store, and into the night. What was in the box? A corned beef sandwich? A donated heart? A taxidermy squirrel dressed as Napoleon? Little tricorn hat pinned between its ears? I opened the box with apprehension. I felt a cloud of cold on the back of my hand. Inside an envelope, I pulled out the slip of paper with a sense of inevitability and dread. Emmett, Truth. Thanks very much.
Well, I don't know what I was expecting based on the description of that story, but it exceeded my expectations, certainly. Thank you, Gary. That is all for the reading portion of this evening, but you don't have to hurry off. As you may have noticed, we have books here that I keep holding up. I think most of the authors here today have some kind of thing on the table, so please take a look. Also, the non-sales pitch part, there are these issues of Carousel Magazine you may have heard of. It's a literary and arts magazine which was around for 40 years until this January. For 20 of those years, it was run by my partner, Mark Liberty. I used to edit reviews for it. And
It is over.
Yeah. But because of that, we have lots of back issues which we would love to gift to the literary public so that they can be enjoyed. So there is a stack over by the door, so when you're on your way out, please feel free to grab one or two or however many based on what we have left. And quick thank yous. Thank you, of course, to the readers, especially the two of you who traveled. Not especially, but like extra thanks for traveling. And thank you everyone for reading, and thank you so much to Novel Idea. They are always such wonderful, gracious hosts, and we appreciate them immensely. Thank you to my partner Mark, who took some photos, which I'll send to the readers. And thanks to you all for coming. It's so wonderful on a Wednesday evening to have so many faces in the crowd. Have a good night, everybody.
And from an August 14th book launch and reading event at Novel Idea Bookstore, you just heard Jade Wallace launching their new novel, Anomia, followed by readings by Meg Freer and Myna Wallen launching her latest collection, a poetry collection, The Suicide Tourist. Ashley Elizabeth Best, whose poetry did just launch, her new collection called Bad Weather Mammals. And then you heard Gary Barwin, whose selected fiction collection, Scandal at the Alphorn Factory, it's just now out as well. So there you go. First of all, my heartfelt thanks to all of you for tuning in to this first hour and a bit, and my thanks to the poets, the authors, Novel Idea, and those who came to listen for that wonderful reading event. And again, thanks to the authors for inviting me to take part, and everyone to allow me to air their work from this event. Let you know what time it is. It's 14 minutes after 5 o'clock, and you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. Just a quick reminder that every week, both hours of this show are uploaded to my personal blog space for it. at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. We'll remain there for 3 years. I try to get that done as soon as I get home, but I may have another event to attend, so it might be a little bit later this evening before I get them in, but usually they're in there by 7 o'clock. So if you check then and it's not there, hopefully by 9 or 10 o'clock I will have them in there. So anyway, let's continue on now with the second portion of this show. Now well into the second hour of the show, it is almost 15 and a half minutes after 5 o'clock. And again, you are listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. And continuing with this hour, we have another launch. This one not at Novel Idea. Let me get my page right here. This is the following night. These are actually back-to-back launches. August 15th, a launch event. This was held at Homesick Potter Studio, an art studio in Berryfield. It was a chapbook launch, and Jason Heru and Michael Glover, where the title of the chapbook is Where We Left Off, and that was a follow-up to their 2014 chapbook collaboration called Kanoa Cake Recipe. And that afternoon, it was late in the afternoon, the reading, Jason read his poetry, and Michael's good friend, Gerhard Pratt, read Michael's poetry because Michael couldn't be there. He's in the UK, but he did listen in and FaceTime or something. I'm not sure what device they used, but or application they used. But he was actually there virtually, I guess is the word I was looking for. So, yeah, and occasionally you'll even hear in this his reaction to something that was going on there. So that's very cool as well. So let's go ahead and just move straight into that. And again, I hope you'll enjoy it as much as I did that day. Here we go.
Well, I guess we'll get started. Thank you, everyone. Many of us might be wondering what's going on here and why we gathered together this afternoon. It is a poetry launch. We're launching a chapbook, a new chapbook that Michael Glover and I collaborated on. It's called Where We Left Off. The books are for sale in the studio if you wanted to check them out. It's also an anniversary of sorts. 10 years ago, in 2014, Michael and I collaborated on an earlier chapbook of poetry called The Quinoa Cake Recipe. It was a big success, as you can imagine. So we wanted to kind of replicate that memory with this new launch. 10 years later, this April, Michael sent me an email stating that he and Ruth were planning to visit Kingston in August, and he stated, why don't we do a little pamphlet together and launch it with a reading when I come over? Later that same day, Michael sent his title poem for the collection, Where We Left Off. I quickly wrote my version, sent it back to Michael the next day. A week later, he sent 12 more poems. I thought the poems he sent were really wonderful. I felt so inspired by them. I told him I wanted to try to respond to each poem like a conversation, and asked Michael if that approach appealed to him, and he said that he liked that idea, and that's the direction that we took. So I reflected on his poems, wrote some responses, almost like an echo circling back, or almost like a mirror reflection of his poems. And we'll talk a bit more about that as we get into the reading. So essentially, this whole manuscript came together in about 2 weeks' time. We looked for some local Kingston press to explore printing options, but the best option we found was a printer in the UK that Michael knew, 1889 Books. They did a lovely job, and we were lucky enough to have Ruth provide the cover art as well. So just a beautiful, beautiful cover art image. So as we all know, Michael and Ruth weren't able to make their trip this summer, but they are present virtually through the magic of modern technology. Thank you, Martine, for wandering around with Michael on the line. You may see Michael on the cell phone throughout the event. And instead of Michael reading the poem, we have his good friend Gerhard reading on his behalf. We did ask Michael, are there any comments that you'd like to add about the poems that we can share with the audience? He replied with the following. Well, as with most of life, it all came about quite haphazardly, with my thinking ahead to the possibility of our first visit in some years, and then of wondering about the Quinoa Part 2, because I always loved our readings, and then of musing on the idea of the emergence of a few poems, and then of letting my imagination free float amongst happy memories and happy past occasions, and then of those germs of ideas solidifying into actual chunky bits of poems or poemlets, sucking in remembered encounters and certain words that help to give those encounters heft and body. And then of showing those poems to Jason, and of him conceiving them anew through the idea of rewriting and reworking and reshaping what I had already done. As so we're not really two, but actually two conjoined bits of one. And with that, we'll start the reading.
Okay, so you might be wondering, why is Gerhard Pratt reading Michael Glover's poems? And the answer is, I don't know. But maybe Mickey at the other end of the phone shed some light. He asked me, and I was very happy and excited, but somewhat overwhelmed by the possibility of me, who knows nothing about poetry, trying to do justice to these lovely poems. But as I'll point out on the way, there is a certain personal relationship that Bernadette and I have to some of these poems, and others are complete mysteries, but that'll probably become obvious. So we'll begin with the first poem, which is called Where We Left Off, for Jason. Is it unusual to begin like this? I still like your photograph, the way you are glancing away, as if the noises off are what really matter once again. Were we of a similar age once? I doubt that for a fact. Whatever, it needn't stop us in our tracks. This belief, I meant to say. That I may still be the ancient of days, and you perhaps, with that characteristic lightness of heel, step, my distant brother's estranged younger son. Would you like that? Like in the way that an ice cream is welcome mid-morning, say, beneath a broiling sky in the midday sun. I would. So let's drive off. Wisconsin, did I hear you say? Well, why not? You have all the dash these days, and some. We can order more chipboard if it ever comes to that.
Where We Left Off, for Michael. And this poem has a bit of a dictionary definition of what the phrase where we left off means. It says, if something continues from where it left off, it starts happening again at the point where it had previously stopped. That's from Collins' Dictionary. Where we left off is where we begin. The lemon ends in its seed. The needle returns to its thread. The falling rain stops so that it can start to fall again. The bell rings to make a sound. The sound grows quiet until it's gone. What's gone is still always going on. Everything missing is found in the end. The echoes rise from a canyon. Hair keeps growing on a barbershop floor. Spiders never finish building their webs. Everything found was missing before. Our distant memories grow nearer the further we get. Departed friends return in order to start to depart again. Some other yesterday will revisit us. Some other sun will rise in the west. What's done always has more to do.
Well, the next poem is called Hook Thumbs, and like every other poem in this chapbook, it has a partner on the opposite page, also called Hooked Thumbs. You gave us your fistful of songs by moonlight.
I handed you an open hand, a quiet shadow.
More than enough.
Less than sufficient.
Old-time crooner's numbers until you turned hoarse and breathless.
A new-time tune that left you calm and mellow.
It was then, when the cold came on, that we wheeled you back in.
A little later, the heat turned on, and we rolled you out.
To the TV screen and the oxygen.
To a drive-in theater underground.
You would sleep then, for hours on end.
You lay awake forever.
And I would sit beside you, slumped, following the game shows lightly.
And I left you there, upright, chased by the heavy starlight.
Thumb hooked into your thumb, old pals together again.
Little finger freed from your finger, new strangers separated for now. You got a sense of some of the poems where the reflection is almost like that mirror reflection, where some of the phrases get reversed. A few poems do that. The next one we're going to read the same way.
These two poems are called Saying Goodbye to Frank O'Hara. I left off reading O'Hara when I left you. It just didn't seem right to carry on.
I began reading O'Hara when we met. It felt good to give up.
I had my own throwaways to contend with.
My forgotten harvest ready to yield.
After all, we are two men amongst men, aren't we, with books, trophies, and brass tacks to prove it.
Even then, we were two zeros among none, with a lot of nothing to prove.
I ran a mile once.
I sat a moment once.
Reaching the edge of the page the day after yesterday.
In the heart of the matter, many years from now.
Which brings me back, and up short, to the nowness of here, of course.
And never returned from where I still am. Here we're taking some leisurely stroll, alone to the mist is no alibi.
With this sentence, still half-cooked, and too much steam about to make my way around this kitchen without falling, face first, badly.
And the stunned silence of wonder is no defense against what's next.
Poets, being clownish sorts, make too much of embarrassment.
Bored poets, sad clowns, innocent outlaws, suspects and accomplices, all of us, waiting for our sentences to be served.
So the next two poems, both called Downhill to the Cataraqui River, are quite closely linked to Bernadette and I, and others as well, of course. And Guy and Susan will also find themselves linked to this poem in a way you perhaps didn't expect. It was those strolls through old Kingston, of course, which kept us together. Down from Frontenac, close to the lake. Remember the toe freeze of that straight down wall clinging cast iron ladder into the water? And then on to Princess Street, that gentle downhill slope, as far as the soothing name of the Cataraqui River. It was generally sunny, being summer, when we paused for coffee upstairs at Indigo's. With the rummage sale of books spread out on a table, a pound, Ezra, some letters, I remember, not quite bought then, forever regretted. All those spine-up enticements, quite close to the window. And then, on to my first jacuzzi. The steam, bounce, and frisk of hot, hot water at the Holiday Inn. Followed by a little potted history in the company of McDonald's spirit at City Hall. And then to drinks on a terrace lake-facing. Three too many before retiring to the shady courtyard of Shea Piggy for a thick as thieves hunkering down over bowls of clam chowder. We talked of book titles, our favorites, and both agreed it just had to be Charles Simic. Return to a place lit by a glass of milk. The Serbo-Yankee poet had nailed it. If that milk hadn't been so guileless, we might well have drunk it and stolen the title too, if it hadn't been chosen already.
Well, you know, poetry is all about truth. And when I read Michael's poem, I realized, the first thing I realized was how long it was. 34 lines, 231 words. And because there are days when I'm feeling very lazy as a poet, the truth was that I didn't think I'd have enough time or energy to really respond fully to such an epic poem. So in my response, I wrote instead about not being able to write that poem. Downhill to the Catarocway River. At this time, due to the increased demand for poetry, some poems are taking longer than normal to write. Although there may not be any guaranteed timeline in regards to when this particular poem may appear, please be assured that its composition remains a high priority and is currently in process. Kindly revisit this page as needed for frequent status updates and further information. In the meantime, may we suggest reading one of the many other poems in this book. The piece on the previous page, for example, also happens to be called Downhill to the Catarocway River and is readily available to be read again. So thank you for your support, patience, and understanding. Sincerely, management.
Well, I'll just...
Yeah, wonderful.
I'll just interject here to say that I've had this chapbook for a few weeks now, and I have revisited the page. It hasn't updated yet. I'm hopeful.
Thanks for your patience, Barry.
Now, the next two poems are called Big Jim. When Big Jim, slick in retail, steered us both down the highway with his knees as far as the ball game in Toronto, he knocked the Red Sox clean out of the park before tunning us back home at speed while still singing, "I'm as much a man as ever, darling. Truth is, I have never not admired him."
Now, unfortunately, Big Jim is not able to join us today. But if he was here with us, and if he heard these two poems about him, I know he'd probably be wondering to himself, why didn't they write a whole book about me? And for Jim, we'll say that we are working on it, but these two poems are what we have for you today. Big Jim. When I met Big Jim, he took one look at my shadow, faded and worn around the edges, and said, "I can get you a great deal on a new one." He led me to the rack, helped pick out a new shade that fit perfectly. It was so well made, I still wear it today. Truth is, it'll likely last longer than me.
We can hear the chuckling.
Yes,
all the way from Clapham. Interlude. You asked again through a gap in the clouds. What was I to do? Stop running? It all comes on so suddenly, and most of it made of paper too fragile to be waved in any wind. You recognize a burial these days by the humming.
Interlude. I stand on my shore and witness no other. Here, where the river's echo flows to the sea of its voice, and the falling leaf lives endlessly in the leaf, falling on and on. The water breaks, recovers, shatters, heals. A rain puddle lies nearby, an infant lake, hungry and awake in its crib of grass. A distant windmill grinds the sky to ground. I stand on no shore and witness another, where the wind is always passing, but never passed, and now has nowhere to be. Where the smoke has risen, a fire once was. Every road endures beyond dirt and gravel. What's left is still around, but it's not ours. Return my happiness to where it's from. Give my ring to the bell that made it sound.
Next poems are called Singing All Day. To drive is to see as far as you need to go. There is no end to it until the steering wheel comes clean off in your hands and the roadside shack winks its fond lamp at you, whereupon you duly enter, doff your cap, peaked, and gladly accept a glass or two. There are old stories, many to be listened to, and the crushed raccoon to be buried, the latest and a long string of local accidents. Meanwhile, the spillway has run dry, the oldsters tell you, which is why now there's only ever the local rye to be drunk. So you have to settle for that and or sing all the livelong day of the love there has always been between just the two of you.
Beautiful. My response to this poem was inspired by two things. The first was Michael's poem, of course, and the second inspiration came from Stephen Hyten's posthumous collection, A Songbook. Songbook gathers all of Stephen's songs, both the lyrics and the chord arrangements. And so when you look at the poem on the page, you're going to see various chord changes, and that's why. It's just in tribute to how those lyrics looked in Stephen's book. Singing All Day, verse. I stared ahead at yesterday's snow, melting in the sun, blazing bright, with a dying fire from the past. How it burned, but remained, a fire without fuel, or smoke, or heat, or ash, a flame of no. Chorus. It hurt to gaze, so I looked away, the way a leaf looks away from the wind, or a star looks away from the dark. Repeat verse. Repeat chorus. All day.
I would love to hear Mickey play that with his left-handed style on his upside-down guitar.
Absolutely.
Now, for reasons that will become apparent, I need to check now. Is everyone still listening? Next two poems, Old Rocking. I have a mind to tell you a story this morning, old rocker. By which I mean of the wooden front porch variety, which is where I happened to be sitting, the van having just driven away heaped high with all the things belonging to my son's half-brother. Yes, I took him in. Now he's gone. Thereby hangs a tale set fair for a day other than this one, since you're asking. What shall we speak of then? Of the here and now, there's precious little of it that tastes sweet these days. Too much of an ill wind that never stops blowing. Too much of the sameness of stale bread. All those overlong pauses between the pauses. You get my meaning. I wouldn't be telling you all of this if I didn't know you were listening. You just told me you were still listening.
Old Rockin'. What's your story, old rocker? I want to know. Tell me what you're thinking, perched on the front porch, under the sun, or the clouds, or the stars, depending on the time and weather of the world. Tell me what makes you totter and sway with such gentle momentum. Your body at rest remained at rest until I sat together with you at the end of another weary day. We applied a force to each other for hours, old friend, a rhythm of equal magnitude and opposite direction. Tell me why we creak and grow loose with time under all the pressure that brings us back to life. I'll pause there for a moment. You know, while we were organizing the event to launch the chapbook, Bernadette asked a really great question. She asked, what is a chapbook? And why is it called that? And of course, having written many chapbooks over many years, I began to explain what it was. And like so many things that I try to explain, I quickly realized I actually had no idea. So I looked it up. I turned to MIT, and they explained, a chapbook is a small book or pamphlet containing poems, ballads, stories, or religious tracts. Chapbooks were so called because they were sold by peddlers known as chapmen. Chap comes from the Old English for trade. So a chapman was literally a dealer who sold books. Chapmen would carry boxes containing the conveniently sized editions either in town on street corners or traveling through the countryside. So there you are, and thank you, Bernadette. I think we all learned something because of that question. So appreciate that.
Meaning things. I wouldn't have said it if I hadn't meant it. Old men like me, we mean things by our words. Nothing comes lightly, when you have the dead weight of a lifetime to contend with? So come and see what I've made of it. The vegetable patch in the back garden. See how much is flourishing. Green shoots of spring, hardy and keen as spears to kill 1,000 ancient Macedonians, if you had an appetite for such things. I'm inclined to walk away from conflict. Get an eyeful of this, youngsters. Killing cures nothing.
Meaning things. I wouldn't have said octopus if I hadn't meant orangutan. Old dolphins like us, we sing things to our songs. Everything goes darkly when you have the living light of sleep to dream about. So go make what has come of you, little garden sown into the dirt. See how little you've withered. Black spade of spring, your flat laid open as an ear, digging into the compact sound of an earthworm's ancient song. If you had a bucket for such water, I'd rather raise myself up from the well. Open your eyes, ghost. Living cures everything.
Every new day. Every day I do try to be a little more truthful. What is the point of lying? I first saw you out there in the garden in April. 2 years on, add on an extra month or two, we were married. You could fact check that if you felt so inclined. I loved you for a lifetime, and I am still loving you. I see where you are not. I raise a glass to you. I even raise a broken cup, your broken cup. You are never not here with me. You could fact check all that if you felt so inclined. Yesterday, the weather was mongy. I sat inside with a flickering screen and a new book barely touched. There's a gap in the door where the wind blows through. I tried to fix it. Is this a diary I'm writing? Or is it a conversation barely begun before finished? I'm asking you. Feel free to ask back. And fact check too, if you're not sure it's me still speaking.
Very nice. This particular response poem is different from all the others that in this book that I wrote, because this poem was actually written a few years ago. And just by luck, it had the same title as Michael's poem, so I recycled it here. Every new day. The snow-covered sidewalk wakes and smokes a pack of footprints. City buses are drawn like moths to a bus stop's flame. Every new day finds us. The wind's freshly pressed dress shirt puts on its body. The way an infant turtle, hatched in sand, finds its path to the sea. Every buttonhole embraces its button. Every cup of tea recites its silent prayer of steam.
I love that image, the silent prayer of steam. The next two poems are both called Incident at the Roadside. Just down there, a little up the road, I mean, there's a young man standing, talking. He's waiting for something. He's muttering into his sleeve. No, no, he's talking to Jesus. No, he's barking into his phone with overmuch passion. I see him slice down with his thumb as if he's cutting someone. And then he drops it and he looks down and then looks up again. A car has drawn up with all the quiet smoothness of patience. A woman gets out, twice his age and some. She levers him into a seat at the back, saying, "Calmness, calmness, darling." At least, that's what I think she's saying.
Incident at the Roadside. After all these many years, the incident at the roadside has no incident and is simply a roadside. The ditch grass sways in wind. Crickets hop across the gravel. No one is talking to Jesus. No one is standing around muttering into their sleeve. The incident is now nowhere to be found. No trace. Forgotten. As if it never happened. Roadside, remind us we are where earthworms thirst for dirt, far from home. As if the car never drew up. As if the woman never got out and said, calmness, calmness, darling. Remind us the roadside is our world.
I'll give a very brief comment at the beginning of the next two poems called The Red House Over Yonder, which I understand is a pub in Kingston that Jason and Mickey frequented and never invited me to. I'll try to do it justice in spite of that. The Red House Over Yonder. Don't do it. Not just yet, Jason. Don't leave until you've turned out your last pocket. I'm facing you over a beer-slick tabletop in Kingston, in the Red House, as they call it, which means that Jimmy's playing, except he's not. Which is part of the problem. If Jimmy were here with us now, pouring his gorgeous blues notes into our ears, we'd be smiling and all would be smoothly paradisal. As it is, this silence means that we don't have 2 cents left between us. Not anymore. Not with all these dead beer bottles rolling around us.
Great, Gerard. Yeah, as Gerard mentioned, the Red House is a restaurant pub downtown where Michael and myself spent many a late night. I think it was actually just one night, but it felt like many. Red House is also a song by Jimi Hendrix. Both of those elements fuse together in these two poems. In my response, I actually borrowed lyrics from different Hendrix tunes. So all the words belong to Jimi Hendrix, and I just scrambled them together into this poem. The Red House Over Yonder. There must be some kind of way out. The key won't unlock this door. Lately, things don't seem the same. I have only one burning desire, but I don't know how to go about getting it, with a circus mind that's running wild. Is that the stars in the sky, or is it rain falling down? Fall, mountains, just don't fall on me. The tiny island sags downstream. Make everything back together. Strange, beautiful grass of green.
Well, now we turn to the final two poems in this collection, and I know for certain these are not the final poems of Jason and Michael. Aptly called, as it just so happens, Thursday evening. Because I want it all to be happening here again, now that it's so much quieter than it always used to be. I want us to be cycling into the wind, or is it the wind at our backs? Urging us on, yes, probably that. And then I want you to be speeding up, coming parallel with me. We're both racing the wind on and on and on. And then, what happens next? Years just slip away without anyone even noticing. The mortgage gets paid off. The children visit intermittently. We crack open a bottle of wine once a week on a Thursday evening, 6 o'clock, sharpish. And this, believe it or not, is that Thursday evening.
12 minutes.
Oh, that's good.
Thursday evening.
6 o'clock, you said.
Thursday evening, hold tight. A change is coming your way. Do you remember what happened to Wednesday? It was here, laughing. Not a care in the world. And now it's gone. The same will happen to you, and me, and all of us. Look at your sky. It's already starting to darken. Listen to your traffic growing quieter and quieter. Your clouds are the gray ghosts of clouds still to come. But you still have time. It's only 6:10. Someone has opened a bottle of wine, and believe it or not, there are poems being written about you, and many dear friends are gathered around to hear them. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Yo.
Martin?
Yes?
Can you pass it around to a couple of us, just to say hello?
Sure. Okay, I am going to put to do it
before
later.
The private conversation happened with Mike and our friends, I want to just thank everybody for coming. It's been amazing to listen to the two of you, and thank you, Mike, for writing it. Because without you, it wouldn't have happened. But what a treat. What an amazing treat. And thanks just for being here and for bringing sweets and savory things and enjoying poetry. I might have a new favorite. Poetry.
And you just heard from an August 15th launch event held at Homesick Potter Studio in Berryfield, Ontario. What you heard was a chapbook launch that Jason Haru and Michael Glover were launching, and it was called, the chapbook is called Where We Left Off. That was a follow-up to their 2014 chapbook collection called Quinoa Cake Recipe. And as you heard, Jason read his own poetry, and Michael's good friend Gerhard Pratt read Michael's poetry. And Michael was in the distance, was watching everything virtually, and occasionally saying a few words. You might have caught those as well in there. So it was a very beautiful event. It is 52 minutes after 5 o'clock, and first of all, my thanks to Jason and Gerhard and Michael in the distance for allowing me to record this. And my thanks for their wonderful readings and the crowd who gathered there to listen as well. And of course, my heartfelt thanks always to all of you out there for tuning in today as well. You are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. Just a reminder, both hours of this show are uploaded to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. We'll remain there for 3 years. I'm going to have some, because I couldn't air any messages, recorded messages in the first hour, I will have a few extras of those coming up here in just a minute or so. And they will lead you straight into 2 hours of East Coast music in a show called Saltwater Music, hosted by Rob Carnell, coming up at right at the top of the hour at 6 o'clock. I will tell you, since you just heard him as well, that there are two book launches coming up again this coming week. You will hear Jason again, and Holly Gattery, and Michael Marola, and Danila Botha. They will all be launching their latest work at Novel Idea Bookstore this coming Thursday night, October 24th at 7 p.m. Novel Idea, as you know or don't know, is right on the corner of Princess and Bagot Street. And Jason's book is Like a Trophy from the Sun. Holly Gattery's is Widow Fantasies. Danila Botha will be launching Things That Cause Inappropriate Happiness. and Michael Marola will be launching Becker's Universe. Go to Novel Ideas' Facebook page for more details. Also, I don't have it with me, but there is also a book launch there Wednesday night. So Wednesday night, October 23rd. The only thing I have is a name I jotted down in my timer. And it is Francois, I believe, local person. Francois May, it's M-A-I. I think I'm saying that correctly. Anyway, that one's happening Wednesday night at 7 o'clock as well. So if you go again to Novel Ideas Facebook page, they're always incredible about updating information about upcoming launches and everything. So anyway, thank you all again for tuning in today. I hope all of you have a wonderful weekend, and I'm just I think I'll just sign off. Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Late in the 1970s, four Kingston women got together to discuss the idea of creating a community house, a place where grassroots organizations, families, and groups could gather, a place where food could be prepared and shared, new skills could be learned, and lively discussion could be encouraged. For over 30 years, Kingston Community House has provided low-cost meeting space for hundreds of groups, allowing people to come together to learn from one another, share resources, and trade skills. As it becomes safe once again to gather in person, we look forward to providing the Kingston community with a comfortable and convenient place to reconnect with one another. Located in downtown Kingston, we operate 7 days a week. For more information on Kingston Community House and how to book, please visit kingstoncommunityhouse.org.
For 50 years, the Banree Foundation has supported the continuing education of women at Queen's. Join Banree for its 50th anniversary gala on October 24th at 7 p.m. at the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts. This event marks half a century of empowering women through education. Tickets are free, but registration is required. To reserve your spot, visit the Banree Center's website, follow Banree Center on Facebook and Instagram, or email brc@queensu.ca.
Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
Walk quietly by, he won't bother you. He's a busy man, he's got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
Two out of three geese.
six out of seven seagulls. And this Transylvanian owl all agree that if they had their own radios, they would tune in to CFRC